Welcome to episode 214 of Fly Away. We're a group of agents from Outlander Travel who get together every week to talk about all things travel. Whether you've been listening for a while or are just tuning in, we're happy you found us. We truly believe that travel has the power to change the world, and we want to inspire others to come along with us. We chat about destinations, current events, our favorite experiences, and lots more. We'd love to hear your feedback and ideas for topics, so be sure to connect with us on our website, Facebook, or Twitter. My name is Sandy, and this week I'm joined by fellow Outlander travel agents, Laura, Donna, and Elizabeth. Recently, Elizabeth was invited to participate in a familiarization trip to Germany in a cooperative venture between the tourism boards of Berlin and Munich. She spent a week in Germany exploring both the old and the new, and we wanted to take a few minutes to ask her about what she experienced. So let's get started. So, East Germany or West Germany? Or
all of Germany.
It's all in Germany
now,
right?
It's all
right?
In Germany, yes.
So you started in Berlin, right?
Yeah.
So do you still see remnants of that?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And that was my first time in Berlin. And I have to say, you know, I grew up, I was just at that age. I mean, I was in college. I was in the middle of my first year of college, you know, second year of college when the wall came down. So, yeah. Right? 1989. Mm-hmm. Yep. The end of 1989.
Okay.
I
graduated high school at 89.
So that's when the wall came down.
Okay.
So, yeah,
next year
is actually, okay. Yeah.
That's right. You're older than me.
Thanks. We're off to a great start here. All the way through high school, you know, and I guess while I was in high school, we started seeing the progress of the wall coming down, at least figuratively, the Reagan speech and all that. So it's all history that I very much remember. I was not alive for the very beginning of the Cold War, but certainly growing up and in school, it was a big part of what we were taught. And then watching that wall come down. So I literally had never been to Berlin at all. And my hotel was right in the middle of the former East Berlin. Mm-hmm. So I was staying in a place that when I was a kid was kind of forbidden, you know, that was, you know, not to be gone to. So, that was very interesting for sure.
So can you tell a difference in the city?
You know, they have done so much rebuilding and, you know, Berlin was almost destroyed after the war anyway. So a lot of things had to be rebuilt. And mm-hmm. the way Berlin has decided to rebuild is it's interesting because we went to Berlin and Munich, and in Munich, everything was also destroyed, but they've rebuilt it as much as possible to look like what was there before. Mm-hmm. In Berlin, it's a little bit more, they basically said, if you're going to rebuild something, it needs to be new. Look, you can keep the old stuff looking the way that it did, but if you build something new to around it, it needs to look new. Like, they wanted it to be very clear what was new and what was old.
Interesting.
And it is interesting. It makes for some really interesting architecture. There still are some structures, and they're actually rebuilding a huge palace that was completely destroyed, and they are building that to look like the palace used to look. I think they, you know, made a conscious decision. But yeah, it's an interesting mix of architecture. But there are areas where, you know, if I were to tell you you're standing in East Berlin right now, you wouldn't think so. I mean, it's very prosperous and very thriving. You know, the whole city is. But you can definitely see, I mean, there's still parts of the wall standing, and they've been left there on purpose. The city definitely is remembering who it is and who it has been all the way through the years from the very beginning. They haven't tried to erase that section of their history. It's definitely still present.
That's good. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. So you did a wall tour?
We actually drove around the city and they showed us where the wall was, where it still is. Part of that was going to Checkpoint Charlie, and they talked about sort of how the wall encircled West Berlin, basically walled it in, which many people don't really realize had happened, but it was actually all the way. Yeah, you think?
Yeah, because would have thought the West would just open up to the rest of Europe.
Right. Nope. And then there were all these checkpoints to get through. So basically, if you were going from East Berlin through West Berlin to get back out into the rest of Germany, you had to go through two different checkpoints to do that. So So Checkpoint Charlie is, of course, the most famous one. It's the one from the Bridge of Spies. I mean, you've seen it in lots of movies, and Controlled by the Americans. And so they basically, it's right where it was, which is in the middle of this street, because obviously the city is now built around it. But they've taken the structure that was there at the end of the wall. The structure that was there has been moved to a museum. And what's there now is a recreation of one of the first buildings that was there. And it's a little touristy. I mean, there were tons of people around taking pictures of it. And, but it looks exactly like it's looked in, you know, several movies and pictures that you've seen. And, so there are several museums that are dedicated to various aspects of the wall. There's a place where you can still see, because there were two walls with no man's land in between in some cases. So there are some places where you can still see both structures, just to give you an idea of what it looked like.
Such an amazing concept that they, like, walled off half the country like that.
Yeah. And one of my favorite things about that tour was the East Gallery. It's the East Side Gallery, where they basically have left up these portions of the wall and then had about 102 artists come in and paint murals on them. And some of them are very famous. Some of them you've probably seen and didn't realize that they were actually painted on a part of the wall. So there's all this street art, and you basically can walk up and down and just see all this art. And it's, you know, it's not just German artists, it's artists from all over the world. And there's all these rumors about whether Banksy has been there, and there's no proof that he actually has been there.
Banksy was on his style. They were referencing Banksy on Doctor Who this week.
Yeah. but yeah, it's really, and it's in, you know, it's in an area right by a river. And she was like, when the wall was here, you couldn't even see the river. Like, you wouldn't even know the river was there. And now there are all these startups along the river and restaurants and, you know. Yeah, it's very cool.
So it sounds like it's a cool city.
It is. And it's known for its nightlife. It's one of the biggest red light districts in Europe. You know, everybody thinks of Amsterdam. Well, and, you know, I say that not – red light district usually refers to prostitution, of course, but it's also, you know, nightclubs and, you know, just a night scene, music, live music, and just all kinds of – yeah.
Did you go out dancing and stuff?
We actually had swing dance lessons. Swing dance is still, and there's actually, Berlin still has some old dance halls standing. So you can, like, we actually had lunch in a 100-year-old dance hall, and it looked every bit its age, but it was an old dance hall, and they still dance there. You know, one of the women from the tourist board told us that her grandfather used to play drums in the band there. You know, like, it's and just all that character, you know, it felt a little bit like walking through a scene from Cabaret, and, you know, you could really feel that energy. But yeah, there's swing dance lessons, which we can actually book for clients all over the city. There's something going on almost every night. And which is a you know, really fun, way to spend an evening. And then we went one night to a show. There's a theater that every 6 months or so, they change the troupe that's performing in there, but they do basically Cirque du Soleil style shows. The one we saw was called Peep Show, which I think there were some people who were glad that it didn't turn out to be a peep show, and there were other people in our group who were a little bit sad, but it was basically there was a little bit of burlesque to it, but it was basically a Cirque du Soleil style, you know, with incredible
little
acrobatics and you know, aerial work and a lot of you know, standing on top of people. It was actually one of my favorite things about this particular troupe was the women would sometimes hold up the men. You know, you don't see that as much. There are these big dudes, you know, these big, strong. And the women just, you know, held them up.
Well, that's because they can carry all those beer signs.
Well, actually, the troupe that was there that we saw was Australian, so not German. Yeah, they bring them in from all over the world. So yeah, we got a little bit of a taste of the history of the city, and then also the, you know, the nightlife and the heartbeat of Berlin as well.
So what else is Berlin near? Like, a lot of times you see people going to Germany as like a jumping off point for something else, but would you recommend like a whole trip to Berlin, or would you incorporate it in something else?
You could certainly spend a lot of time there. There's, especially if you're a museum person, there are many museums there, and we got a taste of the Nefertiti is there, which you've seen pictures of it, the very famous bust. And then there, the Ishtar Gate is also there, which is literally this huge city gate from Babylon that they brought in and, you know, and set up in this museum. So we didn't get to see that, but we did see the Nefertiti. And then there's tons of, especially Greek and Roman art. You know, there was a lot of archaeological work done. Great art museums there. So you could spend quite a bit of time doing that. If you are into the history, especially World War II, there's plenty of time that could be spent there as well. And World War I as well. It's a fun city. You could definitely spend time there. Yeah.
So, yeah, actually my old babysitter is going to Berlin to see you too. She follows you two around and she's seeing them in Dublin. And then she's like, it just would be silly not to, because it was so cheap to fly to Berlin. I'm like, all right, that's cool. Do it. Yeah. Yeah. She's living her best life. So, whenever you pop down to Munich, you were there in October, but that's not really when Oktoberfest is, right?
Right. Oktoberfest was about 2 weeks past when I went down there.
That's a bummer.
Yeah. I did get to see the grounds. I had never actually seen the grounds before. And they're still breaking it down because it's quite a production. So 2 weeks later, they're still, I would say it looks like it's more than halfway broken down. But, you know, there were still large structures being brought down, and
I heard it starts like in September.
Yes, it's usually, yeah, it's the last 2 weeks of September. Basically, the current schedule is it always will end the first weekend of October. So the earliest it would end is October 1st. If say October 1st is a Sunday.
It's funny though, because it's not called September 1st.
Well, it used to be in October, but the difference in weather in Munich. From
really?
September to October, yeah. Basically, it was in October. That's when the wedding was that it celebrated. But basically, as it became more of a thing that was obviously going to stick around, it was too cold. Yeah, it was too cold. So they're like, you know, if we push this back a couple weeks, it would be much nicer. And it really is. The temperature changed. In fact, when we got there, the temperature had just dropped. They'd had a very hot summer in Germany. Mm-hmm. And it remained warm all the way through. So they said that it was just when we got there, yeah. and I arrived on the 21st of October, so.
So your public transportation stuff you did, was that in Berlin or was it in?
Yeah, they tried to, we could have done some in Munich as well, but we just didn't have the opportunity to really, but we took every form of public transportation. We took the tram, we took the train, we took the bus, we took taxis, the subway. So we tried all of it. And
which one was new? There's something new, right? Like a new train?
Well, the train from Berlin to Munich, that particular train, it's a new route.
Okay.
However, so they scheduled it so that we could experience it. The big thing about it is you can get now from Berlin to Munich on an express, on an ICE, in about 4 hours. However, it took us 6.5 because there's construction. So we didn't get to really experience the new experience. It was a pretty long train ride. Probably would have been faster to fly even with the airport, you know, check-in and all that. That said, it was great because, you know, we were traveling the whole time. We were in a first-class car.
That's nice.
Wi-Fi. There's, you know, you can have lunch. The dining car was right next to us. So we did all that, and it passed the time really well. So I worked quite a bit on that train.
I bet everybody was doing that.
It was, well, there were some
catching up on emails.
Yeah. 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 But it is
Germany.
Yes.
How was all the beer?
The beer was wonderful. It took me, you'll be disappointed in me, it took me about 3 days to have a beer. Because they had us touring in the morning and then we would sit down to lunch and I'm like, if I had a beer right now, I would fall asleep. You know, because I've been touring in the morning.
Mick Ultra.
They don't have Mick Ultra in Germany. There's standards.
Because that's not beer.
Yeah. There are standards. But by day three, I had adjusted. And I was like, I think I can do this without falling asleep. I was wrong, but falling asleep
on the train doesn't count.
At lunchtime, they give you those little beers that are like 6 ounces, though.
Oh, they give you those. That's not what I got. You could get a big beer, which I did. So they were 12 to 16 ounce beers, depending on the restaurant.
The food.
The food was good. I actually had more variety than I expected to. But, you know, there's very good Italian food in Germany. A lot of Italians in Germany. So you can find excellent Italian food. I obviously had Wiener Schnitzel twice.
My husband loves that.
And I did have the currywurst in Berlin because that is a more Berlin food. And then down in Munich, I had sausages and, you know, more Bavarian.
My dad always liked it because he was in Germany in the 60s, but it's like not my thing. You know, like, I don't know. I like pretzels.
Yeah. I did have pretzels.
Yeah. I would eat a bunch of pretzels, but I don't know.
What's not your thing, Sandy?
Oh, German food, like the sausage and the schnitzel and all that stuff.
I feel like schnitzel. It's fried meat.
I mean, I don't know. What is it really? I think I'm thinking of wiener dogs when I think of wiener schnitzel.
No. No.
Well, this is my, like, 12-year-old brain sitting in the German restaurant going, I can't eat any of this.
Wiener is Vienna style. It has nothing to do with dogs or wieners. Nothing. Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not wiener schnitzel.
So yeah, the food was excellent. They definitely took us to some great places, some great locations, and all the food we had was very good. Lots of beef, plenty of beef offerings, various styles. So
pretzels.
Pretzels. I did not have a pretzel until the very last evening in Munich. Yeah,
I like pretzels. Cuckoo clocks. Did you see a lot of cuckoo clocks?
No, that's in the Black Forest. I wasn't in that area.
Beer signs? Did you see?
Nice try. I did see beer signs. Actually, it's interesting because I've been to Munich before, and when we were in the Hofbrauhaus, I've been in there before. I actually had a tour where they sort of talked about, you know, how it works, you know, that how the waiters will serve and the bench seating and all that. But what they didn't talk about was sort of the society, and how they meet there. And we got to see twice, actually. We got to see the Stein storage, where I think there's 500 lockers, and you get on a wait list and you can store your Stein there for free. Once your name comes up, you put a padlock on it, there are these families, for lack of a better word, where you come and you hang out with your friends and you have a reserve time. It's almost like fraternities. I mean, it's like these little tiny 8-person fraternities, and they'll come hang out on Tuesdays at 2:00 or whatever. They'll have their table set out. And I had no idea.
They just leave their signs there?
They have their own sink where they can wash out, this copper sink. It's an amazing sink where they can wash out their signs. And when we went to Polliner, which is further outside, up this hill, they also had that tradition is there as well. So, and there were people who store their family steins, you know, steins that have been handed down for generations. And then some people just had the Hofbrauhaus, you know, stein that they purchased in the gift shop. And then,
so I'm not sure where my dad was stationed in the army, but he told me the story of how he got his steins. And it pretty much involved, like, running out of the bar after the bar was closing with all the steins, like, hidden. So those are our family steins.
Yeah, no. Yeah, you could purchase them.
I mean, they're coming to me. Well, they're vintage now. They're from, like, the 60s. Yeah. I mean, that's before we even met my mom, you know? So,
yeah. You know, you can, and there's plenty of stores that'll sell you various types, you know, but many of them have family significance and that sort of thing, so. Sort of the same.
Yeah, I don't think these were special. I think there's, I mean, he made it sound like this is what they serve the beer in the bars, mm-hmm. you know? Like, he did love Germany, though.
Mm-hmm. But, well, he took some of it with him, I guess.
Yeah.
So one of the things that when I was there, the desserts.
So I didn't have anything amazing. What desserts are you thinking of?
Well, we had Kaiserschmarrn, and we had Knackerl, and we had Linzer Torts. I mean,
so the first one I did have, the other two I did not. I've had Linzer Tort before. We generally, like, there was one night where we had a panna cotta. We had apple strudel. I mean, everything was really good, but we had tiramisu the very first night in Berlin. I don't recall having anything.
Pretzels?
Amazing dessert. I mean, all of it was good. I shouldn't say it that way. Anything out of the ordinary or especially German. Apple strudel, of course, was. But, I mean, we had various forms of cake options and everything was really good. I didn't think I was much of a German food person, and I'm not big on sauerkraut and you know, I don't like slaws and things like that, but there's so many other choices too. And so it's a meat and potatoes kind of society.
it really is.
Yeah.
Jeff ordered a salad and it was a meat salad.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah.
With sauerkraut on it.
Yeah. And lots of fish.
No, but it had really good salami.
Yeah. They do. They throw meat on pretty much everything. So,
I know Chris watches like the cooking channels and stuff, or they go to Germany. He's all about that. Like they show like the sausage being made and stuff, and that's just not my thing. I mean, I'll eat some sausage, but that's not.
It was delicious.
It's got to be like, I don't like the light colored sausage that skews me out. You know, like, it has to be.
Well, that's okay, Elizabeth. Next time you go, I'll go with you.
Yes.
Yeah. I'll just eat pretzels.
I think
there's more to life than pretzels.
Yes. And they have amazing mustards as well. So.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and they make a homemade noodle called Spätzle that's really good, Sandy, that you would love.
Okay. Yes.
And Spätzle
I can teach you how to make that.
I will say I would try it now. I mean, there's I would try, like, pretty much anything now, unlike when I was, like, 12 or 15, you know, but yeah, it just wasn't, you know, the thing that I wanted to do. I will say this, too, though. When I go to Epcot, the Werther's store, so good.
Yeah.
The Germany Pavilion.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because we've discussed a couple of German traditions that I think I've learned from Epcot, and one is the pickles. Christmas pickles. That's not a thing in Germany.
Really?
Nope.
That's what I was going to say. She was just like, the Werther's thing in Germany, that's what I'm like, oh, Sandy.
Well, let's go.
Like Nick Ultra because of beer. I mean,
yeah.
I'm willing to go anytime. If someone wants to go with me and play tour guide, I'll go. I'll do it. Yeah, I know. I know I have lots to learn, but these are my impressions.
One of the things that I learned recently about on the Oktoberfest is because I have a client who has a lifelong goal bucket list of wanting to sit at the first table where they pour the first beer. That is his, like, so close on the top of his bucket list. And I found out that, like, the first 10 tables are handed down from family to family.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And probably since, like, the 1500s.
Right. Right. And there's no, like, buying your way into them. You've got to, you know, you're either invited by the family or you're not sitting there.
Yeah. Yep. And some of these tents, as you call them, although they're really more like huts. I mean, some of them are built structures. They're sponsored by, and like there's, I think the oldest one still run by the same family is like 153 years old or something. It's really crazy, the traditions there. And it is very, very traditional. We had lots of lectures about, you know, the Dirndls and the Lederhosen. And, you know, there was one person in our party who kept saying, well, I'm going to buy Lederhosen and then use it as a Halloween costume. And that's highly offensive because it's basically it's their folk costume. It's, you know, it's not a Halloween costume. It's their folk clothing, and it's expensive and very meaningful.
Hundreds of dollars.
To thousands, yes, depending
on some, and thousands for others, yes.
Yep. Lifetime. They said there it's a lifetime investment. You buy it and you know you'll and you may have it passed down. So you may be wearing your grandfather's Lederhosen. It's a big deal to them. It's their it is their.
So you didn't buy the little bar wench dress?
Nope.
Carry some stuff around.
Nope, it's called Dirndl.
Yeah.
My dad had a really good friend of his.
You have to be fitted. I mean, you have to go in. It's a process. And then they're super expensive. I mean, super expensive. It's not just something you buy on a whim.
So you wouldn't buy the t-shirt with the picture of the...
No, that was available as well, though. So, yeah, definitely available as well.
The Lederhosen picture of...
Yeah. That's okay. Jeff has the t-shirt.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, because he was going to buy real Lederhosen because he was in a German Oompa band and he realized how much they cost. And then he's like, no, I can buy a $20 t-shirt.
Yeah. There you go.
And it's a lot cooler too.
Yeah. Well, you go to Party City and buy, you know, a $30 pair of Lederhosen too, but they won't last very long. So
no.
The real ones are like, they're leather and it's serious.
The bartender at Bombshell has them. Mm-hmm. And, he was wearing them when they were canning the Oktoberfest this year.
Mm-hmm. lend some authenticity to the whole,
So tell me about the BMW thing.
So the BMW Museum, Munich is such an interesting city because it's sort of this mix of old and new. But first of all, I have to say, in Germany, there is not a bad ride. I mean, you hail a taxi and you get in it and it looks like a brand new car. And it's a Mercedes or a BMW. They're not like chintzy, you know, cars. Every ride is a nice ride. To have those two makes of cars in one country is, you know, and mm-hmm. Porsche is in Germany as well. So they aren't taxis. So the BMW World there's a museum there. It's also where you can pick up your car. So if you buy a Cooper, a BMW, or your Rolls Royce, all of those can be purchased and picked up at BMW World. So you can and I actually know somebody who did this. When you actually take into account taxes and things, here's what happens. So for a U.S. customer, you're in the U.S., you go to your dealership, you order and customize your BMW. You know, you put your initials on the headrest or whatever you want to do to the whole, you know, pick your colors, all that. And then when you do that, you're given a date because the Germans are like all about being on time. So you're given a date and a time when you can pick up your car. And then you can contact your travel agent to make travel arrangements, or BMW can help you make travel arrangements. But basically, you plan your trip to Germany around this, you know, pickup date. And then when you come in, it's a day-long event. And they present your car to you. You basically learn everything there is to know about your car and all the features in it. It's an amazing floor that they have there. So what we did was the VIP tour, which actually shows you how they store the cars, they get 16 cars a day. They have this state-of-the-art garage where the cars don't actually have to roll or be driven. They're slid into these pallets. They call it the car hotel. And each one has its own little spot. And then, you know, you're presented with your car. It comes up in an elevator and is put out on this. And then they can plug in the battery so that they can keep the car on basically all day and show you how to turn on the lights and like how all the features
so
work.
An electric car?
No, but your car battery that runs all these things could be drained if you had it on without, you know, and they don't have it running the engine because you're inside. So, and then once you have had the whole presentation, you can drive it out of the museum. Literally, there's a little road that you drive out and right onto the highway. And you can drive out on the Autobahn, which, you know, in Germany has no speed limit. So you can really open up the engine. And then it's a used car. So when you're taxed on it for it being shipped back to the U.S., you're taxed at a lower rate than you would be for a new car.
As of today.
Well, okay. So anyway, you know, obviously the trip to Europe is, but if you were thinking, I'd like to take a trip to Europe and I'd like a BMW, then the two things together could
That's
actually
interesting
be,
idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it's a huge event. And you get to then drive your car on the roads in Germany, which is a real treat as well. They have great roads. And of course the lack of speed limit. So,
I got you up to 100 miles an hour in a tiny little Peugeot.
Yeah. They drive on the right side of the road. So there's none of this, you know, trying to remember what side
I would
of the road
be
you're
the
on.
One making everyone mad. Cause I'd be going like 60, you know? Up to 70.
You can be fast.
Well, everybody be passing.
Yeah. Everybody be passing. Exactly.
Now it is actually weather permitting because there are signs that say, you know, if it's wet, the weather starts getting bad, they actually do lower the speed limits.
Yeah.
So you have to abide by the speed limits when the lights are flashing.
So you have to hope that it's not a rainy day when you pick up your car, and it is, there's a full dealership there as well. So you could actually shop and buy your car there. And then there's also a museum aspect to it. And the headquarters are there as well in a big building that looks like an engine. So
they do the BMW and the Rolls Royce in the same building?
Sort of. So parts of the Rolls Royce are built, in Germany, but most of it is still built, you know, Rolls-Royce is practically a handmade car, and most of that's still done in England, but they do make some of the parts for it.
But you didn't see, like, the Mercedes being made or anything?
The Mercedes, I think, is in Stuttgart, if I'm not mistaken, and somebody's listening going, that's wrong! I don't know off the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure it is. We did, as part of the VIP tour, you actually get to sit in a Rolls-Royce Phantom. which I got to tell you is amazing. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not a big car person, but that's an amazing car. There's umbrellas in the door. So when your chauffeur opens the door, he can pop the umbrella, full size umbrella, like big golf umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
And he said that to replace the umbrella, if you lose it, it's like $600 or $800. And I totally believe it because this thing was a weapon. You could have killed somebody with it was heavy. But yeah, the chauffeur can pop it out and have that up so that you don't have to get wet getting out of your car.
Well, that's just, I mean, that
thoughtful.
Sounds, yeah, I know.
It has a champagne refrigerator.
How come all cars don't have that?
I know, right?
has a champagne refrigerator?
It has a champagne refrigerator in it. Yeah.
Standard. Does it make popcorn?
Hmm?
Does it make popcorn? I mean,
no, there was no microwave.
What it doesn't do.
There was
I'm
no
sure
microwave.
You could get that as an add-on.
And the leather, see, I mean, they're like butter. It's just amazing. I have never sat anything like that in my life. And, well, I should say, because we have a friend who collects cars, and when I got married, we rode from the wedding site to our hotel that night in a Rolls Royce. So I was in one for about 20 minutes. But, yeah, they're amazing. Cars. So I took lots of pictures in it.
You're like,
this is maybe the only time I've ever that close to one again, but
nice.
Especially a brand new one. But yeah, you can get any, you know, I'm sure maybe you've heard the legends and the stories about Rolls Royce, but you can have any color you want unless somebody else has had that color before and has asked that nobody else get that color. So for example, candy apple red. There's one Rolls Royce candy apple red and nobody else can have it. It's a retired color. You can have something really close to it, but the actual color from that car can't be used again.
Do you have to pay a big...
I did not ask.
Like, I would imagine that they have to make that cost prohibitive,
yeah.
Or everybody would be like,
well, I mean,
no one else gets a black car.
The car is pretty cost prohibitive to begin with, but
yeah.
It's a $500,000 car, but so Sheiks or whatever will buy these cars and they'll put a moratorium
Sonic
on their color. Yeah.
Nice.
So.
They can afford it.
Exactly. I mean, these things, it's amazing. It's amazing. So we did get to also, one of the cool things that I got to do that I, as a travel agent, it was kind of nerdy, was to go to the Deutsche Bahn headquarters. We were only there for about an hour before our train ride, but we got to go up in the offices and we talked a little bit about the trains, and they gave us an instruction on using the kiosks, which is tricky. So to retrieve your ticket, but that was really fun to sort of see the inner workings of the train system there. It's a big operation, and it is being opened up to the private sector. The train systems are, so pretty soon there'll be competition on the rails.
That's another thing about Germany that I think of is like miniature trains and stuff.
I did not see a single miniature train.
Everyone,
yeah.
Well,
I do think that's a Black Forest thing as well. And the regions of Germany, I mean, they used to be pretty separate states, really. So that, you know, Bavaria and whatever. So they have different personalities,
right.
For sure, and just a different feel. Munich is one of the most expensive cities. It's definitely the most expensive city in Germany, and but it feels like much more laid back than that. Like, you wouldn't look around and think, oh, this is a really, like, that apartment must be $3 million, but it is, you know,
yeah.
It's just a very expensive place.
It's got a little village kind of feel
to
it.
Yeah. So you kind of, you're like, I could live here until you see the prices. And then you're like, I could not live here. Yeah.
I will go live in the forest.
Yeah. And most people even people who work in Munich, you know, it's really difficult to afford living. You know, many of them have to live outside of Munich. So
that sucks.
Yeah.
Well, and the airport's 45 minutes away in a whole other city.
Yeah.
And people take the train in every day.
Yep. And Berlin, incidentally, in mentioning the airport, they're still 3 years away from their new airport, which they've been 3 years away from for probably 10 years. The airport there was literally built in like 3 days out of necessity in the 50s, and it's still operational. It's the weirdest little airport. It's a round airport. So every airplane, when it comes in, basically your customs line starts forming on the plane because you exit the plane and go right to passport control, and then your baggage claim is right there, and then you leave. It was amazingly easy to find my transfer because he knows exactly, you know, he has your flight information. He knows exactly where you're going to be. There's not like a big corral where everybody gets, you know, pushed together and then out.
Yeah.
There's an exit for each individual baggage carousel.
Oh.
So they know exactly where you're going to be. So yeah, I walked out and there he was, you know, sign in hand. So the lady that I was riding with, another travel agent who is actually German by birth, she lived in Germany for the first 18 years of her life. And she's been back a couple times, but she said she hadn't been to Berlin in well over a decade. Just kept talking about how that airport is such an eyesore, and you know, it was fine. I've been to worse airports for sure, but it doesn't feel like,
you would think,
like it doesn't feel like an airport for the capital of Berlin. Yeah. Ironically, the train station in Berlin is gorgeous. It was built, I believe, for the World Cup, maybe several years ago or something like that. It's like this gorgeous structure. And then you get off in the central train station in Munich and it is a dump. And you know, people in Munich will apologize for it. They're like, we know it looks terrible. It really looks terrible.
Wow.
So they have plans to renovate that as well. But yeah, it's, their airport is state of the art, but then their train station looks
terrible.
So it's
like you either got one or the other.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, but I mean, it's still easy to get around though. And you, I mean, the signage is pretty good though.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. As soon as you figure out what Strauss and Plots and all those words, you know, are.
Yes.
Then, yeah. Plots is square and Strauss is street and Schloss is palace. And pretty, you know, then you're pretty good. So, and we didn't do as much public transportation in Munich, but there's trams that go all over, and the taxis are easy to hail down. They're plentiful.
Have Uber?
They do. We used Uber once in Berlin. I didn't bother using it in Munich.
All right. Well, that is our show for this week. Thank you for hanging out with us. We would love for you to share your life-changing moments, travel moments, with us on our Facebook page. You can find us on Facebook as Fly Away or from the podcast page on OutlanderTravel.com. And please be sure to subscribe to us and leave a review in iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'd love to hear from you. On behalf of Elizabeth, Laura, Donna, and myself, Sandy, thanks for joining us this week, and we'll see you next time. Gotta fly!